Welcome to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the radio-controlled aviation hobby, where each week, our hosts discuss everything from airplanes to helicopters and everything in between.
All right, guys, welcome to episode 57, RC Hangar Time. Today we have, and correct me if I say it wrong, but it's Josh Brannon.
Correct.
And you're from, can you go ahead and just give us a little introduction? We're going to do things a little bit different today, and we're actually going to have you on with us the entire time. So go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you, and then we'll get into the routine of our show.
Okay, Josh Brannon. I'm representing Zeal Blades probably since mid-July, I guess, right around when we came on the scene, and have been in the RC community for a little over 3 years, and just started. You know, this is probably my first sales gig per se, but so I just manage sales in the U.S. For Zeal and Zeal affiliated products, and that's it.
Well, cool. Well, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate the invitation.
All right, so I guess we should get going into what we did this week. As everybody probably is hearing, it's only me, CPO, and our guest tonight. So what have you been up to, CPO?
Actually, it's been a fairly jam-packed week for me. I did post the Tucano Carnage on Facebook. You guys might have seen that. So I told you I would tell you the story of how that thing happened, but... it's really not that exciting. I just really am a newbie pilot, really, and found myself in a situation that I wasn't able to recover from. And it was a little bit windier than I should have been out in, probably, in hindsight. I knew it was too rough for the foamy, because when I was trying to get it on the runway just before I was starting to think about taking off with my sensei, the wind flipped it over on the ground. So I put that away and then pulled out the Tucano, thinking, well, this stick plane should probably cut through just fine. And then I got it in the air and realized that wasn't fun at all. It was just the first 50 feet of airspace was just super gusty, and it didn't seem that bad until I got in the air. And even, you know, that Tucano was just kind of blowing all around. And I knew immediately, look, this is not enjoyable. I'm going to land the thing. So I started bringing it around for a low pass to try and get it in an orientation where I could land it. And my decision happened on the very first, like, lap. And then I didn't have enough time to really prepare to land that first time. So my plan was to kind of keep it fairly low and then just swing around, come back, you know, get downwind a little bit, and then come back up and make an upwind, you know, landing. What got me into trouble is as I was going back with the wind, you know, my downwind leg, I hit some gusts that literally pushed me down in elevation into an area where there were some trees, and I gave it as much elevator as I could, and I could not come out of it. I was trying to power out of it, and I just dropped enough elevation going with the wind that I couldn't recover from it. And I ended up I was just coming out of it, and I hit a tree branch that took me down. It was a total, you know, rookie mistake, right? Sometimes I even forget how new to this hobby I am. I get a little bit overconfident, and it was my first time that I was in a situation where I was literally flying, you know, downwind in a position where I couldn't seem to come out of it. There wasn't enough elevator I could give it to overcome that situation. And what I should have done, what I know now, is I should have turned it crosswind and got some lift. But I was still trying to ride that, you know, the circle that you're supposed to fly at the field with all the planes, right? I'm still trying to fly this counterclockwise circle and not thinking I need to break out of that circle and get myself in a place where I can get some lift. And it was just, was a dumb move. So I could have pulled out of it eventually. I mean, I didn't crash it into the ground. I hit a tree branch that literally just took it out. And, well, you saw the carnage. It pretty much demolished itself on impact. So it was a great lesson learned for me. A good reminder that I'm still have a lot to learn in the hobby. And I'm not afraid to admit, you know, that that I still make a lot of stupid newbie mistakes. But, yeah, it was kind of frustrating, but it was fun. I mean, my son and I were just having a ball. We were laughing, walking all the way out to the carnage just because, you know, it was like it was exciting, even though it turned out to be, you know, expensive. Yeah. But the good news is all of the electronics that I have in that thing appear to be in good shape. So I've already got a new plane. I'm going to put it into a flight model Apollo 50, which is kind of a more of a precision sort of a pattern plane. I was kind of wanting to get into one of those, and I found a model that pretty much could be a one for one replacement for electronics. So I'll pull all of that out of the Tucano wreckage and put it into the Apollo when I get it, and we'll see if I can, you know, learn from this and next time not make the same mistake. Yeah. So like I said, I wasn't doing anything cool. I wasn't running any fancy maneuvers. I literally just got in over my head with a downwind position and I wasn't smart enough to get myself out of it in time. I was trying to ride it out, and you know, hindsight's always 20/20. Now I know that, you know, if I can't get out of it, I gotta get across it. So
well,
anyway,
the pictures were interesting.
Yeah, I kind of teased it up a little bit because I was, you know, part of me is embarrassed, right? I spent all this time building it, which the good news is the build video is still, all that stuff is still good. So I didn't lose all of that time I spent. Yeah, the plane is no more.
Friend of mine recently, if I got the story right, he let someone, a friend of his, fly his Avanti Turpin jet. And for some reason, the transmitter and receiver lost signal at some point. And but miraculously, it went into a fail-safe mode and just cut off. But so it cut the engine off and crash-landed, but it landed pretty well flat on its belly. And,
wow.
You know, the airplane was not usable anymore, but the damage was basically restricted to the airframe itself, which was pretty impressive. You could have, you know, usually turbine crashes turn into fireballs and spectacular images.
Indeed, yeah. So keeping all that together is probably just a miracle in and of itself.
Yeah.
Especially with the sheer weight and everything. I just don't – that's crazy. Yeah. I don't get it. Well, you know, I kind of knew what had happened. Their CPO, I didn't really – I don't want to say it per se, but I knew kind of what happened because that reminded me of what I did to my – I had an old Great Plains Shoestring 60, and I put that thing into the ground at about 160 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I ripped the wings off the top of it, and it just – I mean, it was at a – because I had a Super Tiger 90 in it, and it was – a really strong motor. It wasn't a 90 size airplane at all. It was a 60 size, but I had a 90 size motor in it.
Of course, right?
The cowl was basically just taped around the motor just to make it look like there was a cowl on there. And it was fast. And I just pushed it to the limits and boom, I've got the pictures and everything. I turned it into a pile of twigs.
But, yeah, we laugh about my new lifetime supply of toothpicks.
Yeah.
But so the good news is so I destroyed one, but I maidened another one. I did get if Mike were here, the next question he would ask is, did you maiden the 700? And that's probably a very poor representation of what Mike would sound like, but either way, the answer is yes. I finally got the Raptor 700 maidened. Nothing exciting. You guys have, if you've seen the videos on YouTube or on Facebook, it was a maiden hover. I won't even qualify it as a maiden flight. But that thing is rock solid. I'm very happy with it. I took it up. You know, it was my first 700 size flight. So it was a maiden for me and the helicopter all at the same time. So that first hover, believe it or not, was a huge adrenaline rush just to get that huge thing in the air and bring it back down in one piece. So happily, Zeal Blades are still all intact, Josh. So, but yeah, so I took it up, you know, did a little bit of a hover, brought it back down, like shook off the jitters, took it back up again. Ended up later on doing a little bit more intro. I'm only in my front yard, right? I haven't had a chance to actually go to the flying field, so I don't have a lot of room for 700 to fly around in my front yard. But so mostly it's just loops and, you know, and flips, you know, just light, tight stuff. You know, I brought it back, looked it over on the bench, make sure I didn't miss anything stupid. I've been known to forget to, you know, screw a servo horn in or something like that. And I just wanted to make sure I go over everything now that it flies and make sure I didn't miss anything. And it's in ready to go shape. So, the next steps, I'm going to be doing a video on trim flight and, going to spend a little extra quality time, you know, making sure that I get it trimmed out just perfect, both on the, you know, with the CG and the elevator, the pitch trim, as well as roll trim. And then I'll also do the tail as much mechanically or physically as I can, first, of course, but I'll do a video on that hopefully soon. And then I want to really take it out and just fly it, which I haven't had a chance to do, mostly because of time. I haven't had an opportunity to get to the field, but it is exciting. The thing is actually now, more than a pile of parts. So like I said, I crash one and build one. It's fair trade.
Well, congrats on a successful maiden. That's great.
Yeah, thanks.
Even if it is a hover, it's still, like, I love and hate all at the same time the new flight jitters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just gets to me. Like, I don't know, when you put all that time and effort and it's all based upon a hobby where you fight gravity, you know, for fun, you just wonder if it's going to get you the first time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there are so many horror stories of, like, maidens gone wrong, like where the helicopter eats itself the very first flight or, you know, something catastrophic. And thankfully, I've never had that happen, but it seems like every time I maiden something, I'm just expecting, like, something really to go wrong. I guess I can't say I've never had it happen because I had my 500 went through two motors, two maidens in a row. Where they would smoke up, the windings would come undone. It was kind of a bad quality control on an experimental motor I had, and the windings would come undone, and the thing would just turn into a big smoke pile. But anyway, and besides, 700 is pretty darn intimidating. Actually, it's not intimidating when I watch other people fly it, but by golly, when I spool it up and with a transmitter in my hands, it's pretty scary.
I can't fathom the type of money you put into those freaking helicopters. Like,
there is a lot of money invested in that just that one little ship to make it fly. And so it's scary all the way around. But now I'm getting more and more comfortable with it. I'm starting to lose that fear of doing something wrong with it. And now I'm getting comfortable just kind of flying it and manipulating it in the air, which is really what I need to do so I can start progressing.
Yeah,
I think in the end you'll come to love the 700 class. I think once people get past the intimidation factor, as long as you don't lose respect for what it is, you know, it's a flying freaking lawnmower.
Yeah.
As long as you don't lose that perspective, they're easier to fly because they're more stable. They're more powerful, you know. It's just all around. Anytime I've had various different sizes of helicopters, and I'm always most comfortable with, you know, the larger they are, even up to 800s. They just get nice and floaty, and you can make them as agile as you want still, but they're just so much more tame and less affected by the environment and stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I can already tell that just with the hovering and the front yard flights.
Yep.
See, it's the same with just fixed wing. I mean, I was so worried about going from an ultra micro to a big, big intimidating airplane. And No, it's totally the opposite of what you would expect. So much more flyable.
Yep.
Just flyable.
That's right.
They just cost more when you crash. That's,
yep.
Ain't that the truth?
So the moral of the story is don't crash. See? There you go.
See, and I don't get it why we spend so much time, money, and energy building stuff on a hobby where we fight gravity, where we literally fight nature and everything that's the way it's supposed to be, you know, and then we crash it. You know, I look at it as just giving one to the gravity gods, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta donate every now and then to keep it happy.
Well, good. I gave it a Takano, so maybe we'll be cool for a while.
I've given it plenty. And so, nice. Well, that's
so
cool.
What have you been up to, Wade?
Well, I'm still working on the job, the San Angelo job, because I'm down here in San Angelo, Texas, so I'm still working the gig for them, doing the entire city, their aerial photography. So I've been dealing with that. It's been fun. It's been exciting. It's been frustrating. It's been annoying. It's been everything, you know, except for I've made a lot more money off of that by people referring me, you know, and I had a guy come up to me today when I was filming the college and asked me to build a multi-rotor for him.
Wow.
So I said, well, what do you want? And he's like, I want one just like yours. And he said, what is it going to cost me? I said, I could do it for under $2,000 easy. And he says, well, I'll give you $2,000. You do what you need to do and make it work. And so I can't complain about that.
Yeah, no doubt. And the good news is it sounds like he doesn't come to you with unrealistic expectations of what a multi-rotor should do.
Right.
So that's handy.
We talked as I was flying, and I was really nervous, so I pulled it down, and we started talking. And I failed to realize that I was recording at 4K, 30 frames a second. So I chewed up all my memory.
Yeah, you need to find a way to mount an external hard drive.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Hey, you heard it here first.
You heard it here first. So yeah, I've been flying that. I've been trying to figure out this DYS three-axis gimbal thing. Cheap as hell. Got it off of eBay for like $189, brand new. But I'm not digging it.
Oh really?
No, too
much. What's it? What do you like?
Too much work. It says ready to fly, plug and play, whatever you want to call it. But I've been tuning with a buddy of mine, David, for probably 4 days now, and we just cannot get it to hold true at all.
Oh, that stinks.
So I think I'm just gonna send it back and just dump the money on a freaking Zen Muse.
Yeah, they actually work really well. The H3 3D I've got plugged into an Aerial Freaks H1000, which is a 1000 size hexacopter with the DJI A2 in it, and the ZenMuse is, well, the H3 3D is just a GoPro gimbal, as you probably know, but probably not what you need, but they're just so adapted to that system, you know, plug and play, like, truly.
No, that's perfect. I mean, because I'm running the GoPro Hero 4 most of the stuff, and because it's easy and I don't have to bring out a huge, you know what I mean? I'm running the 550 frame, but I've got extenders on it, so I'm sitting right around 750 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm running not the best flight controller, so I've been having some vibration issues, if you will, kind of like oscillating. So that's just recent, so I don't know what went down, but I'm trying to figure it all out, and my two-axis cheap eBay gimbal that I paid $50 for is phenomenal compared to the DYS. Like, I plug it in, and I can't kill it. You know, I shake it around, I do whatever, and there's no jittering, there's no shuddering, mm-hmm. there's no none of that. And the only thing that I hate is the fact that when you film with a two-axis, you get that yaw shake, you know, how it kind of wags back and forth.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to buy the ZenMuse.
Yeah, the 3D, H3 3D ZenMuse is, in terms of stability, I mean, you could, even by hand, you know, you can hold the model and shake it all over the place, and the thing is just like rock steady. You know, you'll see the model, you know, wobbling all around in the camera shot when you're doing that, which gives you a very good perspective of actually how stable everything is. And I think there's a YouTube video out there too that really put me over the edge to get one, where they have a camera behind the camera, and so the video is a top and bottom view from a Phantom or something like that, and you see the video feed from the H3 3D GoPro camera, and then you see the one behind it to see actually what the model is going through, and so you see how violently it's being shaken or, you know, yawed around and all that kind of stuff, but the video coming out of the GoPro is just incredible, and that's been my experience with it. It's pretty phenomenal.
Sold. What about vibrations? Does it handle that pretty well as far as like the dampening system?
Yeah. Now I have kind of a you know, homegrown mount that I put it on.
Yeah.
My own, you know, kind of from parts and pieces that I had laying around, I made a base mount for it, and it has double isolation on it. So in stock format, I can't really say, but because I was adapting something that was ultimately created to fit on a Phantom, into, you know, I was drilling holes and doing stuff with a different plate that I fabricated basically. And so it has, like 8 isolator, you know, the little rubber pieces, between it and the actual Zen Muse mount, and then there's 4 more on that. So, but either way, there's no jello effect whatsoever.
Okay.
None.
Well, then I might have to have you take a photo and send it to me to see, so I can kind of try to mimic that.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Cool. But that's what I've been up to. I've been frustrated to the point where the gimbal's literally laying on the floor behind me.
Sobbing in the corner.
Yeah, I don't care about it right now. I just want it to be gone.
Well, when you're using it for actual AP work, you know, for hire, it's a pretty important piece of gear.
Slightly.
Yeah, your customer might be a little more satisfied with the end product when it's nice and steady and all that. Are you doing stills or video?
I'm doing video. I'm shooting it in 2.7 and 1080p. So 120 frames a second. The good thing is, and this is my little tip of the day, is if you're shooting aerial videography, if you're doing videos and you only have a 2-axis gimbal, just really don't push the sticks at all. And then when you go to edit, slow it down. It makes it look 1,000 times better.
I'm trying to picture that in my head right now.
Slow motion. All you got to do is, like, I use Adobe Premiere, and I just go to like 55%, and it looks phenomenal on some of these slow shots. Yeah. It looks amazing.
Nice.
So, but that's what I've been up to. I'm still frustrated. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
All right. Well, we're done then. Stop talking. Let's talk about something else, like news. You got
news.
Any of that?
I do, sort of, but do you have anything? Because I'll let you go first.
I got a couple things. Nothing major. I do have a couple of stuff for RC Hangar Time 2 updates, but I did notice that just a couple days ago, Scorpion released a new ESC. For those of you who fly the big boys, a Scorpion 160 amp 14S ESC. So that's a new one to their lineup, 59 volt. So that's pretty cool. I've got the little brother to that. I've got the 120 amp, I believe, on my 700. So that's quite a bit more power there.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Pretty soon they're going to have to carry onboard transformers and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I think they're getting to a point now where the cooling fan is going to be mandatory and not optional.
Yeah. Jeez, that's ridiculous.
So a couple other interesting things. So I don't know, have you seen, do you know OK Go? I think it's a boy band. I don't know is that a derogatory term or not. I don't know what to call them, but it's a group of guys that sing together. So you call them what you want, but
yes,
they did a video, and I get the YouTube, and we'll put this in show notes. But there's a video that was filmed with a multi-rotor, and I posted this link for you guys in our chat window here. But supposedly it was so the song is "I Won't Let You Down" by OK Go, and you can find it on YouTube pretty easy. And it's cool for several reasons, but primarily the method it was filmed was with a multi-rotor, and they insinuate that it's a seamless shot, although I kind of question the first couple of minutes if there isn't a little bit of CGI work or something in there to make it look like it's seamless. But regardless, the multi-rotor goes from a forward view, like a standard, you know, camera angle, and then ends up pulling them outside and then going overhead, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff happening down below, which is really cool, all done, you know, videoed from this multi-rotor up above. And then the thing at the very end goes way up in the clouds and gets a whole skyline shot. It's a pretty interesting video, particularly that it was filmed, you know, with some sort of a multi-rotor. I don't know the exact details. I just ran into it. But they're also riding these really cool little Segway-looking chairs. I don't even know what those things are, but...
I want one of those. That's what I want. I was so impressed with what those were that I've been searching on the internet all day for them.
Do you know what it is?
No.
I don't know. Josh, have you seen the video we're talking about?
I'm just now watching it right now.
That's what they are. They're called Unicubs. I just found it.
Those are cool.
I've been searching all day, and I just found it. They're called Unicubs. I don't even care about the multi-rotor. I'm going to have a Unicub, and I'm going to be on it next show.
Who makes that? This looks like a Japanese video, so I'm assuming it's some Japanese coolness that we haven't seen in the States yet.
It's the Honda Unicub. Oh my lord, I want one so bad.
It is cool. Yeah, it's like a Segway for people that don't want to stand up anymore. It's awesome.
I want a price. Oh, anyways, we're getting way off topic. I don't care.
All right, this was related because it was multi-rotor related. So let's not turn it into a non-multi-rotor discussion.
It was until the Unicub got mentioned.
Now it's Unicub related, which, you know, is cool in its own right. That was that. Let's see what else. A little bit of RC Hangar Time stuff. We did have a Google Plus account set up. So Mike put that together for us over the weekend. We actually had a heli hangout. Josh, I don't know if you're aware, but I do heli hangouts every couple of weeks as a personal project where we get together on a video chat and talk heli stuff. And Mike joined, and right away people were like, hey, why are you not on Google Plus? So end result is people asked for Google Plus presence, so now RC Hangar Time has a presence on Google Plus.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool. And Flight Club is growing. We're at 17 now strong, which is, you know, pretty good. It's starting to get some traction. And then the last thing I want to point out, and then I'll hand it over to somebody else to talk, is one of our listeners posted on the RC Hangar Time group a link for something called Spaxels. Did you see this, Wade?
Spaxels. Yes, I did.
Spaxels. Ars Electronica Future Lab. And it took me a while to dig in to figure out exactly what it was, because the website has these... It doesn't make it very clear that there are videos you can watch to see what is going on. But it's basically these lighted multi-rotors that they use... to, you know, do these, I don't know even what you want to call it. Actually, let me go back and see if I can see on their website what they say it is. But they like choreographed multi-rotor, stuff with lights, and at night it looks really cool. They do all these different shapes and designs, and it actually, in the videos I looked at, they do it in kind of concert with something that's happening in real life, like maybe a stage show, or think about, you know, an opera or Broadway sort of a show or presentation, and then these lights become part of the show up in the sky. Interesting stuff. So I had to dig in. It's, you know, we'll put the link in the show notes, but Ars Electronica, and it's called Baxels. I guess that's how you would say it. I'm not really entirely sure. But it was totally cool nonetheless. So thanks, Derek, for posting that. That was interesting.
Yeah, that was really cool. I was like, I mean, I've seen something like it similar, not like quite as crazy or cool, but yeah, definitely one of the coolest posts of the week.
I think the most, so I was trying to go through and look at the videos to figure out, you know, which one really showed me what was going on and what the capabilities are. And I think there's one, there's a video where they're in London and they do Star Trek Into the Darkness promotion. And that one kind of gives a little bit of behind the scenes footage up front, showing them getting ready and how they're kind of running the show before the sun goes down and it's dark. And then they put this big Star Trek, you know, symbol in the sky with multi-rotors. So that would be a good one if you just kind of want to see what the multi-rotors look like and how they're lighted and all that stuff. So
sweet.
Pretty awesome. What you got? Any more news?
I don't know if this is true or not. I've been looking. It says drone and UAV UAS news, which I hate that word, drone. But somebody posted.
Stuck with it.
Yeah, somebody posted by the name of Wade F. Meadows about the Nitro. The Nitro Stingray.
You know, I was actually gonna call that out, and then I saw it was you, and I'm like, well.
I don't know.
Can't call that out.
For all the listeners, they need to find out if that's seriously like a real thing or not.
A Nitro Stingray would be pretty darn awesome.
Not only do you get the cool 3D capability of a quad, but then you get that Nitro sound mix. I just, that'd be the bee's knees, if you will.
That's the whole package right there. It's, you know, full 3D, multi-rotor, smell, smoke, I mean.
And cleanup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun for somebody else to fly. I just want to watch it.
Yeah. Just a couple more things. You guys look, Stone Blue Airlines. They have this new Wi-Fi cam that looks pretty similar to a GoPro called the SJ4000. I haven't really heard much about it, so if any of you guys want to get over there to Stone Blue Airlines or have used it, let us know. It's like $119. You're supposed to shoot 1080p and all that stuff, and it's all Wi-Fi, so let me know. It's SJ Cam called SJ4000. And they come in all sorts of different colors, so you can coordinate with your flying device. If that matters to you. It doesn't matter.
It should.
To me.
It should matter.
It should totally matter.
You've got to be coordinated, otherwise you're total amateur.
Yes. So that's pretty much all I got on that. And then as far as the Unicub, I didn't get a price. However, you control it with your butt. That's what it says.
Sold.
It says it right here. The Unicub is controlled by your bum.
Oh, nice.
All right. I'm done.
Stick a fork in it.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Josh, you got any news? Don't give us everything, but what do you got? Give us one piece of news.
The only thing I haven't read it myself, but a friend of mine was talking about the AMA's official response to the FAA proposed rulemaking, which is a pretty big deal for any, airborne hobbyist, right? And again, disclaimer, I haven't read it, so if I'm wrong, people don't start finding pictures of me to throw darts at. But if it's accurate for what he conveyed to me, there's some language about, people must be affiliated with a nationally recognized, association, basically, and things along these lines. That long and short of it is that the way he was making it sound was that it was as if the AMA was kind of monopolizing their organization as a requirement to be legal, basically. And I thought, if that's true, again, big if, that's pretty shady, in my opinion, that it's, kind of exploiting the situation to better the organization. And I'm a AMA member and all that. And so, again, I have to read it myself to make sure I understand clearly. But if that's the way that it turns out, it'd be pretty sad.
Yeah, so there's always been a little bit of verbiage in the guidelines for aero modeling that says, you know, if you're operating underneath the guidance and code of an organized organization, nationally organized organization or whatever it is, whatever the term they use, I don't have it up in front of me. And everybody's always assumed, oh, well, that's just the AMA, and because the AMA was the only one. So I kind of agree with you that you know, AMA helps them develop this verbiage, and in that verbiage includes a clause that says you should be affiliated with a, you know, some sort of a governing organization for the hobby.
Right.
So, yeah, it did. I know what you're saying. I haven't seen anything recently, so there may be more coming up that you're talking about. But I remember when I first read that, I thought, well, that's kind of interesting that the people writing it suddenly now have written themselves into it, which is yeah. actually one of the arguments R.C. Fly. I don't know if you're familiar with R.C. Fly. Mm-hmm. It's one of the arguments they made is, look, there's nothing that requires AMA to be the only, you know, governing, you know, body for the hobby. We can be an internationally, you know, organization and also provide that coverage for the you know, to meet the statutory requirement or whatever. I'm using air quotes, but, you know, right. whatever the exact verbiage is. But, yeah, I kind of caught the same thing there, Josh. But I haven't seen anything recent on it.
Yeah. Well, he just was talking about it with me a day or two ago. So that was – he was reading, you know, whatever was fresh. And then the other thing that I just remembered that he mentioned also – again, haven't read it myself, is that FPV flight that's out of sight, basically you don't have line of sight directly, would be basically a no-go also. And that's pretty crazy these days with everything that's developing, even right down to FPV quad racing and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're flying through a field or something like that with obstacles, whatever, you're not going to have line of sight even if you lifted the goggles up over your head, you know.
Right.
So again, got to read it myself, but those are things maybe that listeners would want to look into, and if they are oppressive in nature, then it's probably, you know, we need to be speaking up about.
Yeah, I think that's the key regardless, is if we stand by and let somebody else figure out the resolution without voicing our own opinions and concerns, this thing is going to go in the way of the people who are the vocal ones, and it's not the hobbyists that are being vocal right now. It's the anti-hobbyists.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with, you know, organizations like the AMA, which again, I support fully, in general, we have to make sure that if they are the organized advocacy, voice, that they're representing adequately what, you know, the hobby community actually wants to retain. So we can't just take for granted that, oh, well, the AMA is on board with this and they're out there doing everything they can, and just assume that, you know, they're actually looking out for some of these things that we may take exception to. So maybe they're not doing that, but we can't just be bystanders in that respect and hope that it's falling in line with what we would expect.
See, yeah. I hate to say it, but it's just, for me, I have a job that's full-time in something besides RC. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in the military. I've been in for 15 years. I just don't have time to keep up with all this stuff. And I think part of that is almost on purpose for people, you know what I mean? Where they just put so much crap out there about this, you know, this FAA ruling and all this other stuff about flying RC. Like, it's just hard for me to keep up, so, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying. I haven't read it myself yet.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm somewhat hypocritical in my statement a minute ago, but the point is still valid, I would say.
Oh, yeah. I
know there's plenty of people that would just say, well, you know, I'm just going to go fly. I already own the gear. I have whatever, and you know, whatever rules, hopefully I don't get busted, I'm going to go fly, and, you know, sorry, officer, I didn't know about that type of thing. But it all just depends on what they're doing. If it's one of these, you know, morons that's going out and flying in airspace right near an airport and that kind of thing, well, they're just screwing the situation over for everybody.
Yeah, speaking of airports, did you guys see the video of the dude in Mexico that got full permission to fly over an active airport?
No.
Oh my god, that is sick footage. Like, and they're using that to kind of streamline, from what I've heard. Now, again, this is hearsay, but from what I've heard, they're using it to streamline, like, airport operations. Because you get a really good up close and personal, but yet over top view of, like, how airports work. Like, this dude is literally hovering his freaking multi-rotor right next to a taxiing 737.
Wow.
Like, and he got full permission. You know what I mean? It just goes to show you that if you're going to do it right, and everything will be fine. You know what I mean? But at the same time, these advocates, so-called advocates, I'm a member of AMA, but the only reason I really pay for it is so I can go fly at local clubs without having an issue. But these advocates need to really step up and do what they're supposed to do, in my mind. And I know we're getting off on a tangent or whatever. And this is not about the show, but yeah, since we brought it up, I mean, they need to do what's right and really kind of help us out. I just fly under the precedence that I'm making money on video editing. I fly, I do photos however I want to get them, but I only charge for video editing.
There you go.
Simple as that. So, and the cops, if you're respectful and whatever, I've had more cops come up to me getting my card, you know, to have me do business for them than I have. I've never had a cop come up to me and say, you need to stop.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all about how you handle yourself. That's all it is. Simple as that.
Dude, this video is awesome.
Oh, you're watching it?
Yeah, I'm watching it.
It's sick,
he's
right?
Literally, there's an airplane on, you know, taxiing on the runway, and he's flying over the top of him, following him around. It's cool stuff.
Totally legal.
Yep.
I wouldn't say.
And you know what? I bet nobody was hurt during that filming.
Oh, I bet you the FAA was hurt. They saw that crap and were just pardon my French, but they were just shitting their pants.
You said it's in Mexico?
Yeah, it's Mexico.
Aeropuerto desde el aire.
Whatever. Yeah, well, the FAA got no jurisdiction there. So.
I know.
Yeah.
They're like, they're rolling over in their soon-to-be graves, man. It's awesome. Anyways, sorry. So,
well, like I said, I just thought it was, it's, you know, was news in general. So there you have it.
Nice.
It's very good news. You should come on more often.
All right. Anything else?
No, I'm good.
All right, I guess it's time to put Josh in the hot seat then. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
So, you know, be quite honest, right? The reason we asked you to join is because we want to learn more about what Zeo Blaze has got going on, fairly new to market, particularly, you know, you're familiar with Zeo. I don't know how you could not be familiar with Zeo Blaze if you're in the heli side of the hobby, because you guys have pretty much taken – you know, the blade discussion by storm since this summer, and you can't hardly think about what blades to buy without taking a look at Zeo. So you've come on strong, you know, pedal to the floor sort of a fashion, and I congratulate you for that, because it went from 0 to 60. I'm not kidding, where nobody knew who Zeo Blades were, and then all of a sudden that's all I ever see is Zeo Blades. So you guys are doing something right.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and actually, you know, if social media metrics mean anything, I think it was yesterday or the day before, we just went over 8,000 likes on Facebook of the main Zeo Facebook page, and continues to grow. A lot of that is international, so that's good, actually. You know, there's still, you know, we've got a long way to go, I think, in the U.S., in particular, but as you said, it's still, there's a lot of interest. We're, you know, gaining new dealers, you know, at a decent rate. And but like you said, I mean, as far as the pace of things, we've been kind of drinking through a fire hose, you know, to keep up with stuff. And it's a good problem to have, but we got to be smart about that as well, and make sure that quality is kept in check, and that we don't get ahead of ourselves with offering too much too fast, or even making changes too quickly, because you get into a scenario where, you know, if the company's too aggressive and tries to be all things to all people at all times, then you end up with existing stock or inventory with dealers that's already been kind of replaced with the next version of that same size blade, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't want to do that to our dealers either. And so, you know, we got to be pretty careful and responsible with how we release revisions or things like that. So, you know, whether it's a paint scheme or you know, that might add better visibility to the blades or something like that, we want to do that in a responsible way so that people who have invested in our company as partners aren't, you know, hung out to dry type of thing. And there's even been things like adding metallic silver logo to the bottom of the blades that were originally all black. That was an early ask from a lot of people right after IRCHA, and just visibility on the, you know, the bottom side of the blades, they kind of just disappear in flight. And so we added that, was a pretty quick fix. But then there's still inventory out there. In fact, just a few days ago, I got an email and someone was asking about, hey, how come my blades didn't come with the logo on the bottom? I thought they were going to. And I'm kind of like, well, I mean, just depends on who your dealer was and when they bought their, you know, whatever stock they have currently. And these things kind of go in cycles. And so we're trying to find a way of, you know, like I said, responsibly or appropriately bringing in new lines of things that pre-existed that have changes or what have you. And then also just continually fine tuning where the company has actually been in development, or the blades rather have been in development with this company almost 4 years. And so I'm sure one of the questions you might have asked or that we get a lot is, you know, with the timing of Edge kind of fading away and stuff like that, are we a rebranded Edge mold and those types of things? And we're absolutely not. They were doing R&D with blade design several years ago, and it just was, the timing was coincidental, basically.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that a lot, where people either immediately make an assumption that you guys are just rebranded Edges, or, you know, maybe Zeal bought out all of you know, Edges molds and just started making your own off of that old you know, equipment. But
no, yeah, that's not the case. So I think there was some clever marketing you know, on behalf of the company prior to the original launch, which was July 4th of this year. You know, the Edge Vantage and things like that. You know, I mean, when you have opportunities like that and it sparks interest and starts, you know, conversation, why not?
Yeah.
So, like I said, I would just call it clever marketing, but, and some people like the blade, you know, many people like the blades, some people don't like the blades. It goes with any brand. We don't sit here and try and claim to be perfect, and especially even though they've been in development for several years, they're, you know, when you hit the global market, literally as quickly as we have, and with so many sizes, which is, I can't think of another rotor blade brand, that's kind of a tongue twister, say it fast three times, that has released so many sizes in such a short period of time. And even since we launched in July, we've added multiple new sizes. And so, you know, to keep up with all that, and then you get such a cross section of feedback from different pilots and different flying styles, and, you know, this guy is used to flying these blades, and so that's what he's comfortable with. And then he tries a set of our blades, but his flybarless system is tuned for the other blades, and they're not the same. You know, there's so many different things to consider in these things that they're not necessarily just plug and play. And if they are, then there's really not a difference from one blade to the next. You know what I mean? And so we're trying to be different and offer something different, and the feel is different. And we don't want them, people will say, well, what do you compare them to? Go fly them and see if you could find something else to compare them to, because we don't want to be like brand X, you know? But again, like I said, it doesn't make the current profile in each size perfect. If there's things that our customers and, you know, folks using them point out and say, well, we would, you know, I don't like this tendency that it does or whatever. We might try and help them if we think it's a tuning issue. And then if it persists and we hear it enough, then we kind of go back to the drawing board and say, okay, is there something we need to tweak here to make the product better? So that's just the evolution of anything, I think.
You mean to say that the difference between blade manufacturers is not just the color scheme?
Well, what you have in, there are very few, something I've learned, and I work full time in the aerospace industry, is my, you know, my full time day job. This is really something I do just on the side, because I enjoy it. Not to impede on my full time work. But the blade manufacturing is incredibly difficult, and that's why there are so few blade manufacturers out there. What they have to go through to make a set of blades that's usable and durable, and especially with the demands of today's 3D pilots and the profile that we have right now are all 3D blades, is important for people to remember also. They are required to take a serious beating, and someone was talking about physics or something earlier, I think. And, you know, ultimately we're with remote control helicopters, people are doing everything they can in the, you know, 3D and SMAC realm to try and defy the laws of physics, essentially, and stress the machine and everything to do with it, including the blades, to limits that are probably unreasonable, you know, but we do it. And, well, some people do it. I don't. I don't have those skills. You guys know what I'm talking about. So they're not all the same. But when you have a manufacturer, for example, who pumps out and has been doing it for, you know, many, many years for different brands, although the same manufacturer, the quality is going to be there. There are going to be differences in profile. There's going to be some differences in performance, but they're fairly interchangeable in that respect, I would say. They've got what they do kind of down to a science, and then someone comes along and throws out some additional engineering, considerations and changes the profile or, you know, all these different types of things, and they are going to perform different. But that brand is still going to be that brand or that manufacturer. What we're doing, everything in-house. We're not outsourcing to anybody. We're not at the mercy of, we're not a brand that is ultimately farmed out to another manufacturer and therefore at the mercy of their production capabilities and all these types of things. If we have enough of a demand for something that we don't currently offer, we can make a decision to just go and manufacture it. And, you know, if we've got something that we get feedback that needs altering, we can go and alter it. We don't need to go jump through a bunch of hoops and red tape to make a change, in other words. So having that kind of control capability of the product is really a differentiator also. And then also, we're not at the mercy of some third-party company or manufacturer in terms of lead time and being able to deliver the product to our dealers and ultimately to customers. So those are all great advantages that we think we have that maybe some of our competitors don't.
Yeah, that lead time is a pain in the butt, like with a lot of these other companies, not just specific to blades, I know, because I'm an airplane guy, so it's, I don't particularly use 700-millimeter blades. If I did, it's a big arse airplane. I hate waiting. I do.
Yeah.
The less time I got to wait, the better off I am, and the more likely I'm going to go back to you. It's just simple business, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And the same thing with customer service. If there's an issue, like say, for example, in the U.S., I will get the messages if someone goes to our website or they go to a dealer. If they go to a dealer in the U.S., that dealer is going to contact me. If they go through the website, then that's going to go to the manufacturer, and the manufacturer is going to forward that info to me, and I'm going to reach out to them directly and personally, and we'll resolve any issue that they may be having, you know, if there's a customer service type of thing to resolve or anything like that. So, you know, they don't need to wait for, like I said, there's not a bunch of hoops for people to jump through to resolve something. And I'll be honest, I mean, I've seen a few claims of things online with people reporting issues and stuff like that, but I've not received, I think I've only received probably two since we started where anyone actually contacted us and said, hey, I may have a warranty issue here or that type of thing. So two or three. I mean, I could count on one hand. And with the volume of blades that we've got, you know, globally right now, I think that's pretty good. Pretty good ratio. So, we're, you know, again, there's going to be defects. There's going to be things that slip through the cracks. But I think as long as they're performing safely and people aren't getting hurt, and then we adequately and appropriately respond to any reports of any issues whatsoever, then it's all up and up. And we're, you know, we think things are going very well.
What more can you ask for?
Yeah.
Yeah, the responsiveness and agility has got to be just a huge benefit for you guys right now, because you're at that stage where and you've kind of already talked a little bit about your customer service and how you take customer feedback from your product and almost can nearly instantly implement that into your product line. Obviously, you know, as you talked about, you kind of want some measured innovation because, you know, I'm one of the guys who got the blades without the big you know, Zeal logo on the bottom. And yeah, I think it would be cool. I would like to have, you know, that Zeal logo, but you know, so you're always going to run up against that, you know, I just bought the iPhone 6 and now the 6S came out sort of a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great analogy, really. You know, but see, with the iPhone, to use your example, people know and expect that there's going to be constant revisions. And with blades, you typically, they just don't change. You know, I mean, and again, I'm not someone who's going to highlight or pick on other brands, but you could think of most other brands and they don't go through a revision. Now, they might say, well, that's because we fully vetted the product before it was ever released and they're perfect and there's nothing to change. Well, okay, that's fine. For us, we're saying we think that we've vetted very well, but once we have the global market worth of feedback to come in and such a broad variety of pilots to give us their input rather than just a test group, that we think that's more valuable and we want to be attentive to that and respond in a way that pleases everybody who might use our product. So, you know, it's not a – it's not, you know, if someone came to me and said, well, I prefer – you know, Brand X. Hey, by all means, if that's what makes you happy, go for it. In fact, I went to a recent Funfly where I was, you know, representing Zeal while I was there, and happened to have with me a set of another brand of blades that I had just in my stash of stuff. And I saw a friend of mine or someone who I know in the hobby who was looking around feverishly for someone who might have that particular blade in that size because they wanted to try them. And I was like, hey, I got a set right over there in my camper if you want to go try them. And it wasn't Zeal, you know, and so I'm not here plugging another brand. I'm at the end of the day, I'm still a hobbyist, and I am out there to have fun and enjoy myself and help others enjoy themselves as well. So we're not a cutthroat organization, anything like that. We're just, you know, another company who's come along. We're trying to, you know, satisfy, scratch and itch that people might be having for other options. And really in a very fast, responsive manner.
Nice. Well,
as far as your logo is concerned, I want to say that Gina Tucker has the logos on her blades.
Yeah, she does.
Seen a few of those posts, have you?
Yeah. Well, I was just on the Zeal Blades Facebook page, and I've hung out with Gina before. I hung out with her in IRCHA in 2012, maybe 2013. I can't remember. Had to have been 12, but I hung out with her, and I've known her for a while, and it was pretty cool, but I think that was before Zeal really hit the market.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, go ahead. I was just going to...
Well, I just say Gina is you know, she's one of our team pilots, and she is a fantastic ambassador of anything that she's affiliated with, really. I mean, she is as loyal as they get, but she's also blatantly, you know, honest I mean, if there's something that she's got an issue with or whatever, she's not going to hide behind some, you know, sponsorship or something like that and pretend it's not there. So we're very fortunate to have her on board.
Yes, nice. Good person. I had a quick question. Like, are you – I was on zealblades.com, and I was looking, and your multi-rotor blade section is fairly empty, and I kind of shed a tear.
Well, it's interesting you should ask. we actually are very, very close, I would say mid-November, so just a couple of weeks away from launching kind of officially with our props. You know, like I was saying earlier, we've been drinking water through a fire hose and producing so many different main and tail blade sizes that you know, I mean, as soon as we get one going, some new kit comes out, and okay, so now we want to provide something for that too, you know, that type of thing. And so, but the multi-rotor props, we have 10-inch, 15-inch, and 17-inch that are basically T-type props that are solid piece props, you know, that aren't folding and that kind of thing, that are ready to go, and will be available here within the next couple of weeks. And then we have folding props that will adapt to the various adapters that are out there for people that are into that, that will go in, I want to say 14, 17, and then 18-inch coming up here shortly also. And then we'll also have, I mean, we're just like the Zeal rotor blades, we're going to be doing Zeal props in multi-rotor props, airplane props, you name it. We're going to have props for it. And there is a huge, huge demand. And virtually any company that sells any kind of prop, or people who fly, rather, you know as well as I do that they usually burn through their inventory pretty quick. So we see a huge, you know, opportunity there, and certainly are going to be capitalizing on that. So stay tuned. We're just a few weeks out. And in fact, I have some 15 inches samples that if you have something that could use 15s, I could send you a set to try them out.
All right. Well, I guess I better build a bigger hex real soon then.
What do you fly currently?
Currently, I'm using the E300 Tune Propulsion System. Okay. So I fly 9443s or 9445s. So, yeah. Okay. Little small, but... Yeah,
but they're adapted really for that system. So
I'm trying to think of what I've got a hex that's 680. I'm trying to think of what size blades I have on that. They might be 14s.
Okay,
but
yeah, I have currently in my possession some 10s and some 15s. But I've been flying them on that hex that I was telling you about earlier, the Aerial Freaks H1000, and they fly extremely well. I was flying another brand of props prior to that in a similar size, and I would say, you know, they perform just as well, if not better. You know, no vibration issues. Like I said, that's with the Zenmuse camera or gimbal, GoPro Hero 3 Black, and big old giant 22,000 milliamp hour LiPo. So despite the fact that it's a small camera, it's got a pretty stout weight to it just because of the juice that's going on there, but I get 30 minutes with that sucker.
Jeez.
And it's pretty awesome.
See,
that is crazy.
I just run 8,000 on mine, but it's a smaller hex too, so.
Yeah. Well, you gotta have, the power to weight ratio is, you know, gonna, you know, dictate your endurance. So finding the right size for your power system and all that is important. But I mean, if you know, we will have there's a huge demand in those 9-inch, 9.5-ish inch props as well. So you know, we take a look at proprietary type of adapters that will work with you know, say like DJI motors and things like that, where you got different types of shafts on them and those types of things. So we're mindful of all that, and we want to make things that are, or produce things that will be, you know, pretty universally usable.
Yeah, see, that's good, because right now I don't like the stock DJI E300 props because they're very flexible. And
yeah, I noticed that.
I mean, they don't, yeah, they're not very stable because they don't react very well. So I found a guy on eBay that sells carbon fiber blades that have the exact same thing. It's just carbon fiber. And for $40 for a set of 8 of them, mm-hmm, I mean, you can't beat that, but it's still, it's eBay. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
yeah, yeah.
I just want some quality, I guess, more than anything. I think I've just gotten lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, here, like I said, here in a couple of weeks, or as we maybe produce something in your size, if you stay in touch and, you know, we can get some samples over to you for sure and see how you like them.
Yeah, for sure. I'll be more than willing to test them out for you.
Awesome.
Nice. Well, hey, before we had you on last week sometime, I put a post up on the RC Hangar Time Facebook group and asked if anybody had any questions for you. And we had a couple of people who posted some questions. So if you don't mind, I'd like to make sure that we, you know, see if you have some answers for them. Scott Miller says he would be interested in hearing how the Zeal brand idea started and evolved. You talked a little bit about the history that, you know, basically that the company's been around for, you know, 3 or 4 years. But just recently, you know, went to public. But do you know kind of the backstory of how it started, you know, how this thing came to be?
Well, I mean, what I could say is that the company has been involved in manufacturing hobby-type composites and things like that for quite some time. And they have been producing things for other companies for quite some time, not rotor blades per se. And, you know, they also manufacture things for themselves that are not, you know, they're not doing OEM for somebody else, basically. And you know, some time ago they decided, hey, there's a market here. There are very few companies out there that have been successful with this. They have the manufacturing capability, they believe, to make it happen. And so the owner, who is one of the most aggressive, you know, just thinkers that I've ever known, in terms of his drive to just think of new products and new ways of you know, bringing stuff, making things available to people, and re-engineering things, and all, just all, he's always looking for opportunities. He saw an opportunity here, and like I said, he took the time to run it to ground and get the processes in place. It is so incredibly tedious to manufacture and balance and have the, you know, consistent weights and stiffness with foam and all these kinds of things. People just couldn't imagine what they go through. And so
now, is he a hobby? I don't even know. This might not be a fair question, but is he a hobbyist himself, or did he just recognize in the hobby?
No, he is.
Okay.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he pretty much, you know, yeah, he is.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
I like him already.
He flies. He drives. I mean, he is. The thing is he has the capability of anything that he thinks of. He's got his own team of engineers. He can, you know, if they can design it, he could think of it. They design it, and then they, you know, do their pre-production and all this kind of thing and see, is this going to be viable in the market? But in either case, he's just happy to play with all the things that he thinks of.
Nice.
You know, so this is somebody who truly is intimately involved in everything that they produce. He is not just some, you know, mogul sitting in a corner, you know, hearing from his direct reports about how the business is going. And in fact, the owner of the company is who I deal with directly. I rarely deal with anybody else. You know, all my communication is almost, I would say, 99% directly with the owner. That's how involved he is.
Wow. Cool.
A lot of great companies have been built off of that same sort of a method.
Yeah.
Yeah, like SAB Helis.
Yeah. So another question here, we got Derek Townsend who asked if you were planning any other products than blades and props, like carbon fiber stabilizer fins or canopies or anything else like that you guys have on the works.
Well,
or gas tanks.
Yeah, gas tanks. Haven't heard of that one, so yeah, probably not anytime soon. But what I can say to that is, you know, it's kind of a loaded question. I know Derek probably didn't mean it that way, but what I can say is that we are a capability. The capability of the company is very diverse. And rotor blades and props are not the only thing that we are involved in or will be involved in. And okay. So as new things come out, and they will continue to be coming, you know, they may pop up under the Zeal brand. They may pop up under other brands that from the same manufacturer that are a different niche. And over time, people might, you know, come to realize, oh, this is, you know, from the same manufacturer as Zeal, that type of thing. It's not necessarily advertised as such, but just because it's not essential to be advertised that way. But there are lots and lots of things in work.
Okay, cool. Fair enough. You know, I still welcome future surprises, so we don't have to hear it all now.
Exactly.
So his last question, and you've probably heard this from him before, is where are the yellow 700 blades? I mean, what you got yellow in the other sizes, but I don't see yellow in 700.
Yeah, no, we originally I want to say there was yellow, orange, green, and red were the original colors that were proposed, and prior to me getting involved, yellow was kind of abandoned, and then it's been coming back with a couple of different colors. It's very popular because it's very visible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as time goes on, there will be a multitude of colors. As I said before, maybe a couple times now, really, is we just have to be very, you know, very deliberate, and the timing has to be appropriate as we roll out things like that, because we just don't want it. We just don't want people to get stuck with inventory that maybe won't sell. So.
Right.
The colors will continue to, you know, be variable, and we may even go through periods of, you know, now this color is available for a limited time, and then it's not, and then it's back again, or, you know, anything like that. I can't really say, but
hey, it works for the McRib.
Yeah, it do.
McDonald's Monopoly, right?
Hey, you know what? You know, that's a very fancy way of saying, and I might have called you out on this, and I don't know. And if I did, just say, yeah, you called me out, and then we can edit it out. But it just sounds like a very fancy way of saying you're just keeping supply and demand going. That's it.
No, actually, it's not. I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up, but we honestly, I think that they thought that the colors that we started with were going to be, you know, great to start with, and they have been so far. But then there's been the request from a lot of people in different sizes to make the other colors available. And so, for example, if you look at some of the new tail blades that just came out, or that are posted on our website now for people to be able to order, and dealers to order, the 62 millimeter and 68 millimeter tail blades, they actually come in all three colors now. And so they're hitting the streets right off the bat that way, because they're new. And our 550 millimeter main blades, they have only been in yellow up to this point. But that's because they kind of became available after the initial launch, and that was requested. And so really it's, you know, there's been a lot, as I've said, there's been a lot of an attempt at really producing based on what we get the most feedback on. And so we've got threads in different places, you know, different forums, where just a sounding board for people to say, you know, what they would like to have available if they were given a magic wand type of thing. And if we see a request enough times in various places, not just in the US but globally, then the manufacturer is in tune with that, and we'll start pumping them out.
Yeah, I've been noticing that you guys have been pretty responsive too. I mean, obviously within reason, but the threads and the activity with regard to your guys' solicitation for customer feedback has been met with a lot of interaction from you, you know, back. It's not just a one-way feed us ideas and then, you know, we'll pick and choose what we want to do. You actually interact back with the customers with the request, and I see every once in a while where you're like, hey, you asked for it, bam, here it is.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll post that on, you know, like I said, in different forums. They'll post that on Facebook and you know, even when it came down to that Zeal logo on the bottom, before that was chosen, we actually gave the public several different examples and said, here are three or four different styles of, you know, options, basically. What has the most interest? And then we ran with the one that seemed to have the most interest. And then, you know, that's kind of how it's been. So we didn't just, like I said, we didn't just, you know, bring the brand out and be like, okay, this is it. This is, you know, this is your one generic scheme that you get for every size. And by the way, you get like two or three sizes, and maybe we'll release another one in a year from now. And so we hope you like it. See you later.
Yeah. And by the way, they're all out of stock.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's a reoccurring theme, though. And so, you know, we just never wanted that to be the case. And you know, initially, some dealers, I think, were, you know, a little miffed because we had such a good initial response that we couldn't even keep up with the dealer demand. And so they had to wait like 2 weeks to get their inventory. 2 weeks.
That's a hobby and, lifetime.
It is.
Yeah, but they're used to, you know, 60 to 90 days lead time.
Oh, sure.
So I'm told with other brands. And so, well, I was hoping it would be less than 2 weeks or, you know, that I could get them in here sooner. I'm like, well, hey, you know, like I said, we're brand new. As soon as the dust settles and we're able to build up inventories at the manufacturing plant, then this all will subside and you won't have to wait much at all. And then not only that, but everything is currently drop shipped right from the manufacturer. So they're not waiting on a distributor, a U.S. distributor, to have to get inventory in order to forward it to a bunch of dealers. If they place an order, that order, once it's prepared, drop ships directly from the manufacturer straight to the dealer. And it's usually, by the time it's ready to ship, it's usually at their door within 4 calendar days.
Jeez.
So things are moving. And I think as things stabilize and the brand gets, you know, more well known and, like I said, I think it's going to be pretty competitive. So,
yeah, sounds like it. You guys are off to a great start, and I could literally sit and talk with you for hours. Besides the fact that you've got an interesting product and a cool company backing it, you're a cool guy too. So I think I could just go for hours, but I'm pretty sure our listeners don't want 5-hour podcasts. So I guess we should probably start slowing things down.
Yeah, I have some not so serious questions from some listeners that actually just came in within the last 30 minutes.
Nice.
Believe it or not. So I'm just going to go. There's three of them. And once we're done, we can close the show out and we'll finish it up. But if you don't mind, I'd like to ask those on behalf of the viewers.
Sure.
Okay, this one is coming from a guy named Buck Stamps. And he wants to know, what type of airplanes or helis do you bring to a fly-in, like typically?
Myself, I bring in I'm all helicopter and multirotor, so I personally own a couple of 700s, a Goblin 700 Competition Carbon Zeal Edition, and a Minicopter Diablo 700. I've had it stretched up to 800 before, but I brought it back to 700 just because I like the way it flies better. And then I have a Goblin 570 also. And then I've got a DJI Phantom 2, an Aerial Freaks X4, a Aerial Freaks H1000, and a couple other little projects that I'm working on, but that's my fleet.
Cool. All right. Let's see. The next question comes from a concerned heli pilot. He's not going to mention his name, even though it says that right next to who he posted it, but he wants to know, what, if anything, are you eating or drinking at the moment?
uh, Nothing.
Okay. Hey, I'm just asking the questions. Don't kill the messenger.
Oh, God.
And last but definitely not least, I don't even know how to say this. Is it Rob Siasco? He wants to know if you get a lot of chicks because of all the RC toys.
Nope, happily married for 18 years.
Cool. All right.
So answer the question. No. <Just kidding. laughs> That's awesome.
You get a lot of chick.
I do not.
Just single. Just single. Oh,
yes.
Just one.
A lot of chick.
All right, that's it.
Nice. Cool. Anything else, Wade, before we let Josh go and wrap this up?
No, I just wanted to say thanks for taking time out of your day or evening to have a chat with us. It was fun, and I look forward to hopefully working, with you here in the future. So.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks again for inviting me, guys, and hopefully I didn't speak too much, but it was great to hang out for a little bit and hopefully educate your listeners on kind of what we're all about and our goals and intentions.
No, it's all very good, man. Cool. I guess that's it. That's the show, huh?
That is the show.
You've been listening to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the RC aircraft hobby. For more info, you can go to our website at www.rchangertime.com or look for us on Facebook at RC Hangar Time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. For Mike, it's mike@rchangertime.com. For Wade, that's wade@rchangertime.com. Dustin, you guessed it, dustin@rchangertime.com. And for TJ, it's crash@rchangertime.com. What? Anyways, again, thanks for listening and keep flying.